In a world drowning in information, yet starving for wisdom, third millennium thinking arrives as a beacon of intellectual clarity. Nobel laureate Saul Perlmutter and his co-authors offer something increasingly rare, a framework for navigating complexity that transcends political tribalism. This book has quietly become required reading among Silicon Valley executives, university presidents, and policymakers who recognize that our greatest challenges require better thinking tools. What makes this work particularly compelling is how it distills centuries of scientific methodology into practical approaches anyone can use, whether deciding on medical treatments, evaluating news sources, or addressing global challenges. As one tech CEO remarked, this isn't just another book about critical thinking. It's a complete operating system for the modern mind. We live in a paradoxical era where unprecedented access to information coincides with declining trust in expertise. As science has grown more complex and specialized, many have either blindly followed expert advice or rejected entirely out of a sense of disempowerment. This tension was painfully evident during the COVID-19 pandemic, when rapidly evolving scientific guidance left many confused about whom to trust. The fundamental challenge we face involves three interconnected dilemmas: how to identify reliable experts without specialized knowledge ourselves, how to incorporate values and emotions alongside expertise, and how to maintain personal autonomy while respecting expert authority. When making high-stakes decisions without expertise, our first choice involves determining whom to consult. While democratic approaches work for political decisions, quality matters more in situations like medical emergencies. Facts alone rarely drive our decisions. Values, ethics, fears, and goals are equally significant factors. Even with identical medical information, two people might make different treatment choices based on their personal risk tolerance. Parents of children with cancer face particularly agonizing choices where no expert can tell them whether avoiding treatment side effects outweighs disease progression risks. The question of authority further complicates matters. Most modern societies presume individuals have the right to make decisions affecting themselves. The idea of surrendering all personal decisions to experts seems nightmarish, even if they might sometimes be right. This resistance stems from our identity as free persons with rights and responsibilities. Good decision-making requires balanced integration of accurate information from reliable experts, careful consideration of values, and authority placed with those affected by the decision. Scientists must persuade rather than control, explaining findings and demonstrating unbiased practices to convince the public. When autonomy is overweighted, people may reject expertise entirely to do their own research, making themselves vulnerable to charismatic but misleading voices and their own biases. Our strongest sense of reality comes from physical touch. Pounding on a table convinces us it's real. But we extend this sense through instruments, from simple tools like sticks to sophisticated technologies. These instruments allow us to experience aspects of reality beyond our direct senses, creating a shared understanding of the world. A smartphone app that visualizes sound as a spectrograph demonstrates this perfectly. When singing what feels like a single note, the screen reveals a complex chord of overtones. Through such direct interaction with these tools, we begin to perceive sound differently, understanding that what our hearing system processes as one pitch with different timbres is actually a mixture of simultaneous notes. How do we know our instruments are showing us reality? This question emerged when Galileo first pointed his telescope at Jupiter in 1609, discovering moons orbiting the planet, contradicting biblical teaching that all heavenly bodies revolved around Earth. Critics argued his telescope merely created peculiar spots before your eyes rather than revealing celestial truth. Unlike authority-based approaches that enforce agreement through coercion, scientists embrace skepticism and use impersonal techniques to test their theories. Scientific knowledge functions like Heyerdahl's Kon-Tiki raft. Individual logs, beliefs, can be replaced when disproven, but attempting to rebuild all knowledge simultaneously would leave us without foundation. Every scientific proposition can be challenged, but only by holding others fixed temporarily. Each element gains strength through connection with others. We triangulate using multiple pieces of evidence to build a shared picture of reality. While instruments help us identify a shared reality, certain circumstances make direct interaction with reality difficult. Medicine faces complexity in the human body, where doctors can't freely experiment. Climate change operates on timescales too long for immediate feedback. These challenges don't mean reality doesn't exist, but that establishing it becomes harder. Science responds by developing tools for triangulating reality when direct interaction fails. Science doesn't merely identify the elements comprising reality, but reveals how they interact and influence each other. Understanding causes and effects provides the handles and levers we need to shape our world rather than merely observe it. This understanding forms the foundation of technological progress, medical treatments, and social policies that improve human life. When scientists find correlations, like higher osteoporosis rates among people who consume more alcohol, multiple causal explanations remain possible. Different models suggest alcohol directly causes osteoporosis by interfering with calcium absorption, osteoporosis leads to increased alcohol consumption as pain management, or both conditions are caused by a third factor, like sedentary lifestyle or poor nutrition. Each model requires fundamentally different interventions, from alcohol reduction programs to pain management strategies to lifestyle modifications. Without understanding causation, science cannot guide practical decision-making. We need to know not just what will happen, but how our actions might change outcomes. The most reliable method for determining causation is conducting controlled experiments. While correlations merely show relationships, experiments reveal underlying causal mechanisms through intervention. For example, in medical trials, researchers might give one group a new medication while another receives a placebo, carefully controlling all other variables. Scientific experiments require both intervening in a causal system and controlling for other potential influences. Random assignment distributes all variables roughly equally between groups, making it the gold standard for establishing causation. This approach has been crucial in developments from vaccine testing to agricultural improvements. Many important scientific questions can't be investigated through direct experimentation due to practical, financial, or ethical constraints. We can't experimentally cause cancer to study its progression or deliberately expose people to air pollution to study its effects. Hill's criteria provide alternative methods to establish causation in these cases, including the strength of correlation, consistency across different populations and studies, temporal relationship, cause must precede effect, biological gradient, dose-response relationships, biological plausibility, coherence with existing knowledge, and argument by analogy from similar cases. The link between smoking and lung cancer, for instance, was established through these criteria rather than direct experimentation. Establishing causal connections gives us power to change our world for the better, treating diseases, solving famines, educating children. For example, understanding the causal relationship between mosquitoes and malaria led to effective prevention strategies, while identifying the causes of soil depletion enabled sustainable farming practices. However, our understanding of causation in complex systems is almost always imperfect. Climate change, economic systems, and human behavior involve numerous interacting variables that make precise causal mapping challenging. We need methods to account for this uncertainty while still taking reasonable action when appropriate, using probabilistic reasoning and continuous monitoring of outcomes to refine our understanding over time. Uncertainty is inevitable as we explore reality. There's much we don't know or only partially understand. Rather than causing anxiety, science offers a radical approach, working with varying degrees of confidence rather than demanding absolute certainty. This probabilistic thinking provides dynamic stability, like a skier shifting weight while descending a slope. Scientists state propositions with built-in tentativeness, avoiding rigid attachment to beliefs. By quantifying predictions with specific probabilities, they transform uncertainty into a strength, enabling the use of partial information in practical applications while preserving credibility even when wrong. This approach allows them to be confident professionals while acknowledging they'll sometimes be wrong, creating space to adjust theories as new evidence emerges. Using confidence levels represents a form of radical honesty, revealing exactly how strong or weak one's understanding is. In physics culture, it's considered almost dishonest not to indicate uncertainty ranges around measurements. Nobel laureate Luis Alvarez once stopped a physics talk because the speaker couldn't explain where his error bars came from, declaring, "If you don't understand your error bars, I don't think there's any point in hearing your talk." Quantifying confidence levels has real-world consequences for decision-making. For example, when serving on a jury, how confident must you be in an eyewitness identification to vote for conviction? Or consider crossing a street daily. If your chance of being hit is 1 in 100,000 and you cross streets 1,000 times yearly for 100 years, you're likely to get hit once in your lifetime. In politics, expressing uncertainty is rare because voters typically prefer confident leaders who project certainty. Politicians almost always choose absolute statements, "This policy is right for America," over probabilistic ones, "I give this a 75% chance of success." This reflects our desire for leaders who seem like omnipotent parents who always knew the answer when we were children. Experts sometimes fail to acknowledge uncertainty, as dramatically illustrated during the COVID-19 pandemic when a prominent scientist confidently but incorrectly predicted the virus would end within weeks with fewer than 170,000 U.S. deaths. The final death toll far exceeded this prediction, highlighting how even respected experts can significantly underestimate uncertainty. Expert overconfidence can have grave consequences, as demonstrated by NASA's Challenger disaster, where officials predicted one failure in 100,000 launches, despite engineering data suggesting failure rates closer to 1 in 29 launches. This miscalculation contributed directly to the tragic loss of 7 astronauts. The fundamental challenge for expert authority is cultivating intellectual humility, being attentive to evidence strength, and understanding opposing viewpoints. Mark Leary's groundbreaking research at Duke University shows people with intellectual humility pay closer attention to evidence quality, actively seek out contradictory information, and genuinely try to understand opposing views. Silicon Valley's "fail fast, fail often" slogan exemplifies a healthy culture of openness about errors, encouraging rapid learning through acknowledgement of mistakes. Companies like Google and Amazon have institutionalized postmortems after failures to extract valuable lessons. Scientific evidence inherently provides probabilities rather than absolute certainties, making it inevitable that experts will sometimes be wrong. The key is being well calibrated. Their stated confidence should closely match their actual accuracy rate. When students take calibration tests, such as identifying the longer canal, Panama or Suez, or estimating historical dates, they consistently demonstrate overconfidence. Studies show that when students express 90% confidence in their answers, they're typically correct only 70 to 75% of the time. Financial experts demonstrate similar miscalibration patterns. When German stock forecasters provided 90% confidence intervals for DAX index predictions, the actual values fell outside their ranges roughly 40% of the time, far more often than the expected 10%. Phil Tetlock's comprehensive 20-year study of foreign policy experts revealed their predictions were barely better than random guesses. Yet notably, wrong experts maintained the same high confidence levels as those who made accurate predictions. This pattern held true across different areas of expertise and levels of experience. The public's evaluation of experts relies heavily on expressed confidence as a credibility signal. In criminal trials, research shows jurors judge eyewitness credibility primarily based on how confident witnesses appear, rather than the actual reliability of their testimony. This creates a dangerous dynamic since confidence poorly predicts accuracy. Studies show confident eyewitnesses are often no more accurate than hesitant ones. However, this dynamic can shift. When highly confident experts are proven wrong, their credibility suffers a severe blow as observers feel betrayed by the misplaced certainty. In contrast, experts who expressed appropriate uncertainty and acknowledge the limitations of their predictions tend to maintain credibility even when their forecasts prove incorrect, as demonstrated in studies of economic forecasters and medical diagnoses. In scientific terms, signal refers to meaningful information we're trying to detect, while noise encompasses anything interfering with that detection. What constitutes signal versus noise depends entirely on perspective and purpose. When watching a movie, a thick fog obscuring the protagonist's path is signal to you, part of the plot, but noise to the character obscuring their way. Scientists quantify the relationship between meaningful data and interference using signal-to-noise ratios. This concept is easily demonstrated with text. A 16-character message like a_stitch_time becomes increasingly difficult to decipher as random characters replace the original ones. This quantification helps scientists measure and compare situations objectively, allowing them to project what level of signal versus noise they'll need for specific purposes. Filtering is the key strategy for extracting signals from noise. Like a WW2 pilot using an equalizer to hear an SOS broadcast amid static, scientists develop specialized filters to isolate meaningful patterns. Our brains excel at this filtering once we know where to look. We can even hear signals through static after being primed to recognize them. However, this pattern-seeking ability has a dangerous flip side. Our brains readily see patterns in random noise and attribute meaning to them, a tendency that can severely compromise our decision-making. Our minds have a natural but naive expectation about randomness. When asked to distinguish between genuinely random sequences, like actual coin flips, and human-generated random sequences, we consistently misunderstand what true randomness looks like. The discovery of the Higgs boson demonstrates the extraordinary lengths scientists take to avoid confusing noise with signal. At the Large Hadron Collider, two competing international teams independently searched for evidence of this particle by analyzing data from trillions of proton collisions. Even with billions invested and compelling evidence, physicists remained cautious, initially calling their discovery a Higgs-like particle rather than definitively claiming to have found the Higgs itself, demonstrating the scientific commitment to distinguishing real signals from statistical noise. When making decisions based on probabilistic evidence, we must establish standards of proof that balance two types of potential errors. In a criminal trial, jurors must weigh evidence to determine if the defendant is guilty, signal present, or innocent. Prosecution's evidence is noise. The decision matrix creates four possible outcomes: correctly convicting the guilty, correctly acquitting the innocent, wrongly freeing the guilty, false negative, or wrongly convicting the innocent, false positive. In a world of uncertainty, we inevitably make errors, but we can choose which type we prefer to minimize. If we're more concerned about false negatives, missing real signals, we set lower thresholds for declaring signal present. If we worry more about false positives, false alarms, we set higher thresholds. The criminal justice system exemplifies this with the beyond reasonable doubt standard, biased against convicting the innocent. College admissions illustrate the trade-off between error types when using standardized tests to predict academic success. Setting a high test score cutoff minimizes false positives, admitting students who will struggle, but increases false negatives, rejecting students who would thrive. This isn't just a mathematical calculation, but a policy decision reflecting institutional values. Medical diagnostic tests demonstrate how base rates affect error patterns. For rare conditions, most positive test results will actually be false positives. Not because the tests are worthless, but because the conditions are uncommon. When most people taking a test don't have the disease, false positives can outnumber true positives even with reasonably accurate tests. The trade-off between false positives and false negatives represents a fundamental dilemma where reducing one error type typically increases the other. Setting decision thresholds reflects value judgments about which errors we find more acceptable. Science can help estimate probabilities, but can't determine which standards of proof to use. That's a value judgment. What separates scientific problem solving from everyday approaches is a unique form of optimism, not mere positivity, but a disciplined belief that problems are solvable given sufficient persistence. Most people abandon difficult problems after hours or days, but significant challenges require months or years of sustained effort. This scientific optimism helps overcome our natural cognitive laziness and tendency to abandon problems when progress isn't immediate. Even when facing setbacks, scientific optimists maintain their determination by viewing failures as data points rather than dead ends. The power of believing something is possible has historical precedent, like Fermat's Last Theorem, which mathematicians pursued for 358 years because they believed it had a solution. Andrew Wiles finally proved it in 1995, demonstrating the power of sustained intellectual effort. Similarly, the development of mRNA vaccines, once considered impossible, took decades of persistent research before becoming a revolutionary medical breakthrough. This can-do spirit enables scientists to tackle seemingly impossible challenges through iterative advancement, making incremental progress while building on previous attempts. Many social conflicts stem from perceived scarcity, the notion that resources are limited and must be distributed in a zero-sum fashion. Scientific optimism challenges this assumption by seeking ways to expand available resources. Over the past century, while world population quadrupled, extreme poverty dropped from 60% to under 10%. Demonstrating how innovation can create abundance rather than merely redistributing scarcity. Examples include agricultural innovations like the Green Revolution, which dramatically increased food production, and renewable energy technologies that are creating new power sources rather than fighting over existing ones. While scientific optimism provides motivation to persist through challenges, it isn't blind positivity. We must balance persistence with pragmatism, recognizing when a problem truly isn't solvable with current approaches. This requires regular assessment of progress, willingness to pivot strategies, and honest evaluation of resource limitations. The key insight is that humans generally abandon difficult problems too quickly rather than persisting too long. Scientific optimism functions as the accelerator pedal that keeps us moving forward, counteracting the fashionable cynicism that can shut down productive conversations. The approach has proven particularly valuable in fields like climate science, where the magnitude of challenges can seem overwhelming. Rather than succumbing to doom and gloom narratives, scientific optimists focus on developing solutions like carbon capture technologies, advanced nuclear reactors, and more efficient solar cells. This mindset has also driven remarkable achievements in space exploration, where seemingly insurmountable technical challenges are routinely overcome through persistent effort and innovative thinking. Moving beyond individual rationality, we now examine how groups tackle problems collectively. Historical views of groups have been polarized between pessimism and optimism. The pessimistic view emerges from post-hoc analyses of group failures, while the optimistic perspective stems from simple demonstrations that make groups appear brilliant until you realize these demonstrations involve no actual group discussion. Early pessimistic views of groups include Charles Mackay's 1841 work on herd mentality and Irving Janis's concept of groupthink. Mob behavior thrives on de-individuation, loss of personal identity in crowds, and emotional contagion, emotions spreading through groups. Janice identified 8 symptoms of groupthink, including illusions of invulnerability, collective rationalizations, and pressure on dissenters. The optimistic view comes from Francis Galton's 1907 demonstration that averaging many individual guesses often yields remarkably accurate estimates. This wisdom of crowds effect isn't magical, but stems from the statistical law of large numbers. Random errors cancel each other out when aggregated. Importantly, this effect doesn't require group deliberation and can actually be undermined when people discuss their estimates. To optimize group decision-making, several key practices emerge. Group leaders should refrain from stating early preferences to avoid anchoring effects. Groups should foster cultures of respectful argumentation where devil's advocates are welcomed. Though homogeneous groups feel more comfortable, diverse groups more effectively reduce noise, overcome biases, and find better solutions while enhancing legitimacy. When making important decisions, facts alone are insufficient. Our values determine what we do with those facts. The challenge is finding constructive ways to debate value conflicts while still reaching consensus on actions. For complex policy decisions, we can separate factual determinations from value judgments through a systematic approach. First, identifying the values and goals that matter, then determining how different options affect those values. We may be the first generations capable of building a world where everyone can thrive. Recent decades have seen extreme poverty drop from over half to less than a tenth of the global population, despite population growth. Literacy rates climb to 87%, and population growth begin to slow. However, to realize this potential, we must develop techniques for constructive, large-scale collective thinking. Deliberative polling, developed by Jim Fishkin in the late 1980s, addresses the problem of uninformed public opinion. Instead of capturing superficial views on complex topics, it brings together randomly selected citizens for structured 3-day events where they become informed through briefing materials, small group discussions with trained moderators, and questioning expert panels representing diverse perspectives. Scenario planning helps make decisions when facing unpredictable futures. The process begins by identifying pending decisions and determining key driving forces that could impact outcomes. Participants develop 4 scenarios based on a matrix of the top 2 driving forces, helping determine which options are robust across all scenarios and identifying signposts to monitor which scenario might be emerging. The Good Judgment Project, developed by Tetlock and Mellors, has proven remarkably successful at political forecasting. Their approach outperforms simple aggregation, prediction markets, and even professional intelligence analysts with classified information. Their super forecasters, often ordinary people without special credentials, demonstrate the key third millennium thinking traits: open-mindedness, willingness to acknowledge knowledge limits, and readiness to revise beliefs as they learn more. The decisive step in building a third millennium thinking culture is recognizing good faith partners, those committed to finding truth rather than just winning debates. The authors suggest that willingness to be proven wrong is the tell for identifying such partners. We should seek this openness in individuals, experts, and institutions, building trust networks based on demonstrated learning capacity rather than tribal allegiance. As we enter the third millennium, rebuilding trust networks becomes crucial amid widespread misinformation. While waiting for societal solutions, individuals should cultivate relationships with thoughtful contrarians to avoid echo chambers. Third millennium thinking represents not just a rejuvenation of enlightenment values, but a genuinely new kind of enlightenment for our time, one that combines rigorous thinking with collaborative problem solving to address the complex challenges we face together.